extensions. Wouldn't make sense right after.
Really, and the back one, it's just that he was conservative, it wasn't an environmental. I always have such good subjective reasons.
Is that related to what you were just saying about progress on the plan?
Yeah, but indirectly, I think Steve is
Meeting is called to order.
Right.
Okay, Deb. The entire audience now knows.
Good morning. I'd like to call to order this 28th meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council. My name is John Weingart. I live in Surgeonsville in Hunterdon County. And starting with Debbie Pascarelli, who's on the phone, let's all introduce ourselves.
Hi, this is Debbie Pascarelli coming to you from beautiful Greenwich Township, Warren County. Okay.
Janice Kovach, town of Clinton, Hunterdon County.
Kurt Olstead, public member, Chester Township.
Elizabeth Calabrese, Bergen County Freeholder.
Tracy Curluccio, public member from Hunterdon County.
Jack Schreier, Morris County Freeholder.
Michael Salivar, Bernardsville, Somerset County.
I'm Amy Letts, Precipity.
Tim Dillingham, I'm a public member. I live in Mercer County.
And Glenn Petrano is on his way and stuck in traffic, and I think Skype wants to have White Neck is not going to be able to join us today. Will the wish please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance? Pledge of Allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This meeting was advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act and publicized on the Council's website. Welcome everyone who was here. We have minutes from our last meeting. Would someone like to move approval of the minutes?
I move the minutes.
Second.
Any comments or corrections?
Christian?
Yes, sir.
In my comments last month, they missed the point of it.
What page
are
you on?
Page 9, public comment period, Robert Fry, Hackman Township. In conclusion, that the Highlands regs have stifled applications for farmland preservation in Hackman Township. And I provided staff with block and lot.
Well, I'm sorry, so you're suggesting adding a sentence? Or
please.
That would say that, just repeat it.
My point was that the Highland regs had stifled applications in Pohackon Township for farmland preservation.
Okay. And then you provided data to the council. All right. That acceptable to add to?
Yes.
Make a good motion?
Amended motion.
Okay. Any other comments or corrections to make? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? Okay. My report, I just have two brief things. One is one item we're going to add to the agenda today, which we'll do sort of as 8D in effect, would be, and to try to do this at every meeting, is to ask the staff to give an update on where we are with the timing of producing the regional master plan so we can keep, you know, in terms of the schedule we adopted when we extended the deadline and get a status report of where we are with that. So we'll discuss that a little bit later. And just to remind the members that the major benefit of being on this council is the opportunity to file a financial disclosure form, and ours are due to be submitted by the 17th, I believe, is the deadline. You can file them online, and if you happen to have brought yours with you today, Tom Borden is a notary and can sign off on them if he did it right. Any members have items to report on?
I had to pay postage due to get mine from the state.
Excuse me?
I had to pay postage due to get my ethics. So not only did the governor cut our lunches, but he also is undercutting the postage.
It's like he's so far out in the wilderness.
Right.
I just wanted to mention that we heard a day or two ago that Morris County's farmland preservation applications have been favorably considered by the State Ag Board. And although it's very difficult to get farmland preservation funding now, Morris County looks like it's going to do very well in those farms. So we'll have to wait and see how it falls out, but at the moment it's looking very well.
One other item I want to mention is, we all know there are three vacancies on the council, and Dante and I have been working with the governor's office and DEP to try to get movement on filling those as quickly as possible. Our hope certainly is that the governor would move forward with nominations in time that the Senate could consider them before they adjourn for the summer. But we have no guarantees of that at this point. Executive Director's report, Dante?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one note on the timing of financial disclosure forms. That date that John mentioned, the 17th, that's actually when it's due to be received in Trenton. So if you have it, if you'd like to send it down in hard copy, you need to get it to us sooner than that, and we'll be sending a whole package down. Alternatively, if you decide to do it online, which you can do and need to save postage, that goes down directly, and you'll get a proof that you filed it. And if you would please present those to us, we'll keep them on file to make sure we have a record that all members have done it in compliance with the executive order. And they've actually even required all the executive directors to certify that members have done that, so we can pull that all together for you. In terms of staffing, we've gotten a very good response to our advertisements. For the job postings, we posted those five different positions. We have 30 applicants or more for resource management specialists, 30 for grants and outreach, 70 for the government affairs position, and 10 for the water resource engineer position. We are in the process of interviewing folks now. We hope to have our interviews for the resource management specialist position, or resource, did I use the right name, Steve?
Yeah.
By Monday, and we want to expeditiously then get that to, I guess it would be the personnel committee, and I believe the chairman during the committee report segment wants to talk a little bit more about the process that we propose to do that, but long story short, we want to move that expeditiously. The sooner we can bring the staff on, the better. We have already had a number of very good candidates, so we're very heartened by the process so far. In terms of the regional master plan progress report, as the chairman has described, we want to have a process to update you at each meeting on the status. As you know, we spoke about a number of tasks in that big task list we had last meeting for how we're going to proceed through the end of the year on development of the plan. What we will do is to have a narrative summary in the ED's report each meeting. In addition, we have prepared a progress report, which we are circulating to you now, a deliberative document for your consideration, so that you can see in a little bit more detail about the progress that we've made since the last meeting. And finally, when possible, we also would like to give you a quick PowerPoint to show you some of the significant elements, all designed so that we stay on schedule. And that you're alerted to upcoming important issues. Today, after the committee report segment, Steve Balzano is going to be doing that visual presentation for you, and we'll be able to answer your questions at that time on the progress report. I would like to thank staff in particular for working very hard on this process of monitoring and reporting back, because we believe it's very important for you as members and for the public. And in particular, I'd like to recognize Debbie Lawler, who's been helping us out from the Meadowlands in terms of developing this progress report and reporting back. On data sharing agreements, you'll recall that we're sharing data with a number of counties. We have now gotten all but one of the counties signed off formally on the data sharing agreements. Morris County just signed theirs, which we appreciate. Passaic County, we expect, will sign shortly. And with that, we will be in a position to be able to then not only collect data from counties, but also share it with them and have our data in a way that's going to be helpful. One of the purposes of data collection, obviously, is development of the plan, but also it's part of having good data that other governmental entities can use. In particular, our parcel data brings a new level of information that's extremely helpful to other our sister agencies and other local government units, and so we're almost in a position to be able to fully share that. On outreach, I've listed a number of things in the packet which show the outreach that we've done. Again, the outreach is being done by most of the executive staff. We're not taking any of our line staff out of plan development to do this, but some of the important meetings we've had have been with Opatcong Borough, with the Alliance for Action, Water Supply Advisory Council. We spoke with Holland Township, Raritan Compact, Morris County Economic Development Corporation, the Warren County Projects Committee. We had our first roundtable with the Sussex municipalities. It went very well. Hanjack, Ickle, had a Land Use Institute conference. NJCF had an open space event. Interagency meeting with Office of Smart Growth to stay coordinated on the work of the plan with the regional master plan here. Main Street, New Jersey. The governor just had a transportation conference where he went through the capital funding priorities, etc., for the administration. And New Jersey's economy is having an event as well. In terms of upcoming outreach, Water Supply Advisory Council, Rutgers faculty bus tour is happening this year again. We have a meeting with Washington Township in Warren County. The Water Supply is having another meeting, Hanjack. The League of Counties conference is coming up in June, and then another ICL event. Again, we believe it's important to stay coordinated and keep our outreach going with our outside stakeholders, but we also want to make sure that our plan is being developed. So we believe we're walking a good balance, Mr. Chairman, and getting our work done here inside and also taking care of outside responsibilities.
Just to clarify, ICL is the Institute for Continuing Legal Education, which is a good way to reach a lot of lawyers that's going over the plan, and also I think they're also a good way to get feedback from people who are dealing with the law at different venues. So, thank you. Any comments or questions?
Just want to say I appreciate your giving us this update to the staff.
Yes, staff did a great job, and we will be coming back regularly so you can stay on track if you have questions, again, during the presentation or outside of that. Please let me know.
Duncan, how many interviews have you conducted?
Probably a dozen or so.
It's 10.
We have 10, probably about 10 more on the resource management position. So you know we started with that because that's probably our most vital need right now. We have the fewest scientists right now on staff. And as I believe I alerted members in an email during the week, Lynn Brass Smith, one of our environmental specialists, has announced that she's leaving as well, and that we anticipate filling her position as part of the same process. So again, it's critical that we bring those scientists in as soon as possible.
And one of the things Dante and I discussed is having the personnel committee meet sometime in the next week or two to get more of an update on where we are at the interviews. Okay. Questions? Okay, committee reports. So I'll start with Tim, the Natural Resources Committee.
Mr. Chairman, we've had several meetings of the Natural Resources Committee, one on April 20th and the second one on April 27th. Really, we've been involved in reviewing and trying to finalize some of the technical supporting analysis that's going to go into the regional master plan itself. Specifically, in the context of those two meetings, we received and work through the water capacity analysis, which is really, you know, an attempt working with the United States Geological Survey to identify the capacity of the watersheds of the region to produce water, and then to address how do we allocate or estimate how much is available for allocation to both societal uses, water supply itself, as well as ecological uses within the region itself. And as you can imagine, that's a fairly complex process, and we've had a lot of discussion, a lot of input, a lot of interaction between both the TAC committee and the general public, in part in the charrette, in part in separate meetings. In fact, the last our meeting on the 20th, I believe it was the 20th meeting, we had the TAC members actually sit in as, you know, in the committee meeting itself. So we integrated those two and were able to get their feedback and input into it. And I think there's some documentation in your packet there from the Highlands Coalition, at least that some of the concerns and issues that they had raised with us in this seem to have been addressed as a result of that process. On the 20th, we also worked through some of the details on the agricultural sustainability grant, and I think there's a resolution on the agenda today dealing with that. On the 27th, we got into some of the other natural resource assessments. One, the ecosystem assessment issues, primarily forest integrity, riparian or stream corridors, and you know, highlands, open waters themselves, wetlands, and surface water systems. And really, what we were doing is reviewing the technical approach to identifying and characterizing those resources, which will then be used as a basis for the analytical work that goes into the plan, both the mapping, the identification of where it is, the use of it in build-out to understand what the capacity is of the region to support future development, where it might be, and a number of other sort of ancillary uses, particularly in the riparian corridor analysis. Part of that will come out will be where the ecological integrity of that area around the stream and floodplains in the region has been compromised by existing development, and where there might be opportunities on a regional basis for us to go back in and do some work in restoring that. I guess I'll just wrap up by saying that, you know, the papers are available there. They are fairly complex. I think the staff has done a great job in tackling the issues and putting it down into a reasonable, workable form, and moving some along so that those analysis can be teed up and used in the master plan development, so that the planning is, I think, to the greatest extent humanly possible, scientifically based. So.
Questions for Tim?
The comment about the Highlands Coalition comments reminds me, I mentioned to Dante for future meetings that it would be helpful in the packets we get, even by email, that the attachments be grouped so that things that are public comments, like the Highlands Coalition comments or Warren County or whoever, are in sort of a section that are distinct from what's coming from our consultants or our committees, or so that just the context is a little clearer when you go through all the many things you're sending us.
Yeah, one of the things, unfortunately, that we seem to send you an earlier version of the ED report. One reason we handed it out today to you is that it actually incorporated what the chairman had asked for. So apologies on the first version, but the second one kind of tends to group them. Electronically, I'm not sure how to group them and sending them, but I guess if you read through the ED report, that should hopefully give you the guidance of why it's there. So I'll give you the context.
Smart Growth and Economic Development Committee. Committee met just once, Ms. Perry, but not as often as natural resources, but the staff provided a technical memorandum on three issues, on water supply, wastewater infrastructure, and brownfields, and the process, similar to what Tim described, of the technical memorandum are not policies so much as the approach that the staff is using to address each of these issues. And they went through and explained them in ways that made sense to us, as those of us who were there at the committee meeting, and we encouraged them to continue in that direction. The documents, the technical memoranda, I don't think have been distributed to the whole council, but they're certainly available if anybody...
They're in the
packet. Okay. I mean, and there certainly is a summary of the meeting in the packet as well. One just procedural thing with that committee, Ben Spinelli had been the chair of that committee. I served as acting chair for this meeting, and needs a new chair. And what I would like to recommend is several things. One is we have had an interagency committee that has not met very often. Lois Cuccinello was the chair of it, and its functions really seem to overlap pretty heavily with the Smart Growth and Economic Development Committee. So what I would like to do is merge Interagency Committee into the Smart Growth and Economic Development Committee, and ask Jack to chair this committee, and also ask Janice to serve, being one of the other members to serve on this committee. The bylaws are a little unclear about whether the council needs to take this action or I can take this chair, but I guess the best thing would be if that was agreeable with everyone, if we had a motion to do that, make those changes to the.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. All right. Thank you. Budget and Finance Committee. Debbie Pasquarelli.
The Budget and Finance Committee met on April 27th. A primary objective of the meeting was to review where we stand with budget actions. actual expenses versus budgeted expenses. And I think there's three main points to emphasize from the Budget and Finance Subcommittee report that you had in your packet. One is that we determined that income and expenses were on track within the fiscal year 2006 budget, so we should not have any problems with meeting expenses within the budgeted fund. Secondly, we reviewed the proposed 2007 budget, which, as you all know, is not finalized yet. But the figures that we reviewed indicate that the proposed budget would provide the necessary funding for the operations of the council and the continuing cost to develop the regional master plan through the next fiscal year. Also, we reviewed the municipal and county grants program and the budget for that for the current fiscal year. You'll recall at the last meeting we discussed the agricultural grants program and the need to verify that there's available funds for that program to implement it. After examining the status of the budget, and most materially, there was a $450,000 anticipated expense, which won't be realized. The committee determined that there are funds available for the expanded grant program to address sustainable agriculture, and the committee agreed to recommend to the full council that funds are available for this program, and on the financial basis, would be subject for approval. And that's it.
Any questions for Debbie? Okay, that concludes our committee reports, and Dante, we'll turn it back to you.
Mr. Chairman, before we move on, there are two issues that might be appropriate to raise at this time. One is if we wanted to go through the process for having the personnel committee handle recommendations on new hires. Did you want to say something or for me too?
Well, we discussed this a little bit at the last council meeting, I think. Question is how best to move ahead on filling the vacant positions in a way that is both efficient and also is respectful of the confidentiality that has to be kept with people who, you know, are applying for jobs here and probably haven't told their current employer that they might be leaving. So what's your recommendation?
The staff recommendation would be if the full body agrees, what we would do is we complete our interviews and I present staff recommendations to the personnel committee. And if that's acceptable to the committee, I would then pass those on to Department of Personnel and the governor's office for approval. And if we get that approval, we'd be able to announce to the full body that we've gotten approval and which folks were starting. So essentially it would be a delegation to the personnel committee to handle it expeditiously. That would obviate the need to come back to the full body for an approval to go ahead and then running it through the personnel committee. We could, of course, do that on an ad hoc basis or call an extra meeting. My own recommendation would be, given the speed that we'd like to move and the fact that the personnel committee has been involved, I think it would be an appropriate delegation if members feel comfortable.
This would be for the non-executive staff positions.
Yeah, we're hiring no executive staff level at this point, so the bylaws would not prevent this process.
I'd be delighted to move that if it makes sense to do it as a resolution.
Okay. For a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Great. Mr. Chairman, there's one other document that we included in the packets, and that was information about our Highlands Graduate Studies Program. In the past, we've had a program that used the services of grad students who've been quite helpful to us. Those are folks from the various universities nearby who are studying in the very fields that we're working on our regional master plan development. Our proposal is to continue and make permanent that program. And what we would do is make it open eligibility to graduate students who either were taking graduate courses or who had graduated from grad school in the subjects that are related to our plan development. That would be planning, natural resources, legal, GIS, etc. We would offer them either stipend or credit, as the case would be. We would run this through our professional services program, which we have extant already. I can ask the treasurer to comment in a moment, but we have run it by her committee to make sure that the funds are available. We do have funds that have not been used in that account for this purpose. I would note that we already have two grad students who are with us right now, Anthony Cortese with the University of New Hampshire, BA in Economics, who's been working at the Blaustein School on his master's program degree. Megan Saunders, who's also beginning a master's program at Blaustein, both of whom have been excellent with us so far. And they've been working for a stipend, but they've been very helpful to us. We have a couple of additional folks who we've identified that would be helpful. We'd be looking at approximately 5 or 8 maximum per year at a budget that would follow, well, the amounts would follow essentially the state standards for using students. And the maximum budget would be no more than $40,000 per year if we got that many students. But it would depend on our availability and our need. We do have a notice up on our website, which lets folks know about our exciting work here at the Highlands and asks if any grad students are available and interested for the positions. But we thought if we could raise it to the full council here today, it would be helpful to us because we would like to institutionalize this. It's very effective, it's cost effective, and it would help us for our plan development. So I guess we'd be seeking an approval from the council today if you think that's appropriate.
So you'd like a resolution to continue and make permanent the Highlands Graduate Studies Program?
Yes, sir.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion or questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Any abstentions? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I would turn it over to Steve Valzano to give the members a PowerPoint presentation that summarizes the progress that we've made and again updates you on where we are in terms of status.
Hey, everybody. At the request of the council members, we've provided to you today a progress report of the status of development of the regional master plan. Over the next 90 days, it is very complex, so there is a long laundry list of task items that are in development. The progress report was intended to be simplistic because of the complexity. If you have any suggestions for clarity, additional information you want to incorporate into that, we'd certainly be happy to make those adjustments as we move forward. The purpose of the progress report, thank you. The purpose of the progress report is to identify tasks according to the schedule that are under development during the reporting period, identify those that have been completed from those that are still in progress, and establish priorities for work on the following reporting period. So it helps us prioritize our work, prioritize our staff and contracting resources. I wanted to just give you a real quick update of what we accomplished over the last month since we last met and adopted the revised schedule. We're still working according to the established framework for the plan, which includes 3 major components: the technical analysis and reporting that really creates the basis for the decision-making that the council will have to make with respect to the guidance document, which will be the policies and strategies for implementing the regional master plan at the local level. And then the implementation framework is how the instruction booklet on how municipalities can comply with the regional master plan. In terms of major accomplishments this reporting period, we've completed a series of major milestones. Certainly, the revision to the project schedule was a significant effort. We're going to be reporting to plan development today on the results of comments received over the last 2 months to our scoping document, reporting to the plan development committee on the results of input we received from ATTAC technical advisory committees during a charrette that was held, 2-day charrette that was held some time ago. The most significant completion has been advancing building consensus and advancing the initial analysis on our groundwater capacity and continuing to advance the evaluation of our water quality assessment, primarily focusing on nitrate concentrations in groundwater. our Highlands Open Water Inventory, riparian corridor analysis, forest integrity analysis are all substantially completed. Utility capacity service area determination, build-out analysis, brownfield site inventory is also substantially completed. We're primarily focused on data development to inform decision-making relating to resource assessment, where the resources are important in the Highlands and where development is inappropriate. From the smart growth component that looks to really identify where growth can and should be accommodated and to what degree that densities can be established to make allow for maximum efficient use of available land. Transportation capacity is complete. We've completed an inventory, preliminary inventory of open space. We've updated the preservation area boundary line based upon enhanced spatial data, so it's much more accurate now. It's actually tied to the parcel level, and we're working with DEP to QA that. There's no changes in delineation of the preservation area boundary. It is consistent with prescribed in the Act. It just ties it closely to the parcel data, so everything is very spatially accurate.
See, if we move on, just so everyone is very clear on that point, we're not modifying the boundary at all. We're making sure that what's depicted on the GIS is as accurate as possible to what the Act says. So for anybody to think we're not actually changing the line, we're just making sure that the depiction of it is accurate to what the Act says.
One of the challenges is that you're working with a variety of different data sets is in order to tie everything together ultimately and allow it to be usable at a municipal level or at a site plan review level, it has to be, everything has to be consistently of consistent spatial quality. So the same place on the ground has to be represented in all these different data layers. So as we go and continue to develop new data layers, we're constantly doing quality assurance on our existing data sets to make sure everything's of compatible quality. We've made significant progress on advancing our MP3 grant program, and we're reporting on the results of those to the council over the coming month or two. But certainly the primary focus over the last month has been to continue to advance the water resource management component, particularly the water capacity analysis, evaluating what the limitations and opportunities are in terms of water availability, focused on groundwater resources within the Highlands region, start to get a handle of what the capacity of the existing resources are to support not only human need, existing and future, but also ecological needs, which is a requirement under the Act. Spatial representation of data is going to be very important, and what I try to do today is just to give you a little bit of a taste of how data is going to be expressed, so you can get a sense of how it may inform decision-making moving forward. In terms of our water resource assessment, everything is going to be expressed at what's known as a HUC 14 level. That's a hydrologic unit code. It is the smallest delineated drainage area that is reliably mapped. As we move forward in the future, we're going to look to refine this data set, but this is the best available data that we have to work with. Most of the water capacity analysis deals with base flows to stream or the interaction between groundwater and surface water supplies, recognizing the importance of maintaining base flow for ecological health of streams, maintaining base flow for the sustained safe yield of our surface water systems, potable systems, and looks at the withdrawal or use of groundwater and its effect on those base flows of streams. Data is expressed as a series of classifications or ranks that could be expressed, in this case, at the HUC 14 level. When you, the ultimate goal is the variety, we're using a variety of methods. One of the primary methods is what's known as low flow margin, which looks at the low flow conditions and the effect of groundwater withdrawals on those low flow conditions. Again, the statistical analysis that goes into this is extraordinarily complex, but this allows for a relatively simplistic expression of values geographically at a level that allows us then to apply that in a municipal land use planning context. Consumptive groundwater uses are an important aspect of our determining available water supplies. The relationship between the low flow margin and the consumptive uses gives you indications of perennial yield. The higher, the darker the color, the more stress there is, or the more degree of stress on available water supplies, the greater limitations in those areas to support future growth. In some cases, such as in this area here, there's deficit issues where the existing water uses exceed the system's capacity to provide water to the existing population, which creates huge management issues that the council will have to, that we'll get into as we proceed. That there's a variety of ways in which you can look at the data to assign relative degrees of risk. This is the same capacity estimates based upon varying methods of looking at existing uses, consumptive uses, total uses, uses through full allocation, which we'll get into in more discussions at a later date. But as you start to increase the degree of use, you start to see additional stresses on the resources, areas that whose existing demands may exceed available capacity. So it starts to paint the picture in terms of the ability of the resource to sustain human populations and to accommodate future growth. Again, as you continue to increase use, you start to get a picture of where the stresses in the systems are. And then those will inform management decisions. Where there's like color, we can aggregate the resource limitations in terms of the capacity to support development or to maintain for ecological values is similar, so we aggregate. So yellows can be aggregated, light blues can be aggregated, and similar management policies and land use standards would apply within those regions. Another way of looking at the data are stresses on systems. Again, looking at a variety of statistical outputs and comparison of those outputs, you can start to identify where stresses are on the existing system. And as you increase uses, what happens to the sustained protection of those resources. Again, starts to paint a picture of land, of resource management issues, land use constraints, development capacity constraints.
How does this differ from the last stress analysis that you showed us? I mean, what's different between this and the blue stuff?
This is...
between the green and the blue.
This is expressed as gallons of water per day that the system produces. It does not allocate those to ecological or human use, but it looks at how much available or surplus water there is in the existing system. The green reflects the relationship between the amount of water that's consumed and the base flow. So it is essentially a percentage of how much the flow in streams is currently consumed by existing population. And as you change that relationship, in this case, increase the amount of use from consumptive to total use, it changes the degree of pressure on the system, and it gives you indications of stress. So where blue is gallons, green is the relationship or the proportions of gallons used to gallons capacity in the system.
Steve, can you just tell us what the absolute values are in the scale there?
I can't because it's not a fine enough scale, but these are just these are illustrative. They're breakpoints that just reduce to four breaks. There's nothing that goes into establishing those breaks at this point. So there's just expressing data according to four breakpoints that were arbitrary, I mean, just for illustrative purposes. So this is not the decisions on where those breakpoints or thresholds are is actually the next action. What's that? Yeah, it just takes a full range of values and cuts it into four sections. It's a very simplistic application just to give you a sense of what's coming down the pipe. This is not intended. These are actually policy decisions that the council will have to make on where do we establish those breakpoints.
Right, but looking at these maps, so you have comparative evaluations.
Yes. Yes, these are all consistent value. So part of the next steps will be to start looking at what the source of these stresses are and what limitations they represent on future development opportunity. You can see that There's two issues here. One is, the 80 corridor and the 78 corridor, the urban area associated with the eastern fringe of the Highlands region are certainly areas where there's significant consumptive use based upon societal needs. You have our portions of the core area within the northern Highlands that are also under stress but have relatively low density. So there's a variety of different issues that contribute to stresses that we'll get into and explore in greater detail as we move forward. Water quality, another major element of the plan is our water quality assessment, primarily focused on septic density and nitrate dilution modeling, again, to look at stresses on groundwater or risks to groundwater quality, which is a major source of drinking water for the region. A lot of data goes into this, well data that has values on nitrate concentrations that vary throughout the region. The values are expressed, again, at a HUC-14 level within our water quality assessment. We're looking at septic densities as a primary source of nitrate as an indicator of groundwater quality. So this shows the distribution of septic densities based upon existing land uses within the region. Again, we based upon the statistical analysis done by USGS, the relationship between land use, septic density, and background nitrate levels allows us to extrapolate existing median nitrate concentrations through the region. From which, again, the council, this is a little bit less clear than the water capacity, but from which the council can start making informed decisions where resources are under threat in terms of high nitrate concentrations, where there's opportunities for development that would not compromise the integrity of the groundwater quality. Data can be expressed in a variety of ways. This is one way of expressing data that you're going to see a lot. It's called a density map. It essentially takes values. In this case, it's a probability or a risk, a relative degree of risk of exceeding nitrate concentration levels at varying degrees. The lower the concentration level, the higher the risk associated with land use change. And you can start to look at changes in concentrations. Oops, sorry about that. You could start to look at changes in nitrate concentration levels and get a sense of where the greatest risks are to contamination of groundwater supplies as a result of continued development pressure based upon nitrate levels that will have to be established by the council through policy decision. But this type of information can help to inform those decisions. Highlands open water, next major element. Is our ecosystem assessment. Tim touched on some of those things that we're working on intensely. Certainly, the open water inventory streams, wetlands, are a major, have been a major undertaking. We're trying to get both comprehensive and spatially accurate data on where our streams are, where wetlands exist. It has been a significant effort. These are streams throughout the Highlands region. All the streams are classified based upon existing classification schemes. We're attributing based upon a variety of different indices of quality, both biological and chemical, to get a picture of where our high-quality waterways are that require a higher level of protection to sustain those values, where impairments exist that may require a high level of protection to allow for restoration, or where impairments exist as a result of existing land uses, and it's a matter of not allowing or preventing further degradation of those water resources from future development. The riparian corridor analysis, we were going to do a live GIS presentation, but in the interest of time, we'll save this. Again, riparian, the difference of riparian from streams, where streams actually looks at the water course, riparian corridors look at the contributing land associated with that that's important to sustain the integrity of that water course, things like floodplains, alluvial soils, hydric soils, areas that have shallow depth to the water table, the land in which the water is traveling to get to the stream in close proximity to the stream. Forest ecology is going to be a major element of the resource assessment. Forest is both an ecological indicator as well as a water quality indicator. Significant amount of data analysis has gone into this. I'm not going to go through it. It's similar to the water capacity and nitrate dilution modeling work that has been done. And it's intended to express data in a way that can inform decision-making by the council. A huge amount of effort has been ongoing and will continue to ongo for years, I assure you that, with regard to utility infrastructure, where it is, how much is available, what properties are served now, what properties can be served in the future. This is a major element of our regional growth area analysis, both in terms of defining areas that are appropriate to receive growth and establishing limits on how much growth can be accommodated within available infrastructure systems. Build-out analysis will be ongoing. It is an iterative process. It's intended to both analyze the results of the regional master plan policy decisions as well as to inform those decisions. We've completed the initial run, the trend run, which looks at the availability of land based upon existing zoning and what the likely build-out condition would be according to that zoning with existing regulatory frameworks in place prior to the Act. This essentially, the trend run essentially becomes our baseline condition. What would have happened to the Highlands region if the Highlands Act was never passed and land development patterns continued as they have been. We've gone through, we're very deep into both evaluating, developing methods to evaluate redevelopment potential and to define regional growth areas. It's a major focus area for us right now. Using the data to inform identification of areas that are appropriate and inappropriate for growth, those that are appropriate for growth, how do we define those boundaries? How do we estimate what amount of growth can be accommodated? Certainly transportation networks are informing those, as are population concentrations, intensity of land development, a variety of different criteria going into the analysis. One of the things we're working on, staff is working on, Roger Caron and Chris Stannis primarily, is what's called a disymmetric mapping approach to redistribute census data. This is how census data on population is expressed based upon the what's called the block group definitions, that it's fairly large coarse data. It's not very informative in terms of getting to the fine level of detail we need to get to actually put a line on a map that has the utility for municipal zoning and land use decisions. The disymmetric mapping technique redistributes the population based upon a variety of criteria, including constraints on lands, ownership of land, past use of land, and the intensity of land use. So the difference between it takes a very coarse data set and very much refines it to in a way that we can use to inform decisions. Two criteria that we're using population statistics extensively on that will inform the regional growth area identification and delineation are concentrated development patterns and population centers. This starts to give you a better picture of where those population centers are and the associated level of development intensity to support those populations.
That's a description of status quo, what's out there now, as opposed to...
This is actually 2000 census data, and it looks at what the existing pattern of human population distribution is across the landscape and the intensity of that use.
Right, but it more accurately reflects geographically where it is as opposed to assigning it to statistical census tracts. Right?
Correct. Okay. For example, the gray is, you can see that the, particularly this block, if you look at this block group, based upon census tract data, the assumption is that the population density is uniformly distributed across that geographic area, and that's not the case. That's not how our... land use occurs. So what the disymmetric mapping does is redistribute that population that exists within that block group based upon land use characteristics and land constraints. So that the it doesn't change the population. The same number of people still occur within those geographic area. It just it redistributes it to where they actually occur.
How does it know that that's where they really are?
Well, it's we're going to get into this.
is this an arbitrary?
No, no. Actually, it
NSA.
we have information on land use conditions, so we know where residential developments are. We have information on land condition, so we know where the constraints, where people don't live. So what it essentially it does is it takes that block group and classifies it based, separates out the constraining lands where no people live, and then redistributes the land use according to certain classifications, high density residential, low density, moderate density, commercial, industrial, and then takes that number of people that occur within that geographic area and redistributes it within those areas that support, that have land use conditions that support population.
It's a model,
it's not an absolute.
Real life absolute mapping of where people
no,
actually are.
No, no, it's but it's just it's a much more refined data set than, it's actually been a lot of fun, but a huge undertaking. It's been a huge brainstorm. Chris and Roger have done a great job. What's that?
You need to get out more.
I know. No, this is what I consider really cool because. It is a major limitation of information that limits the ability of municipalities to make very educated, informed decisions on land use. And it really will add significantly to not only the utility, but also the accuracy of the regional master plan assumptions. Working with coarse data sets such as these, you just don't get a lot of useful information out of it. It's informative. But ultimately, the land use capability map is going to draw lines, and it's going to draw lines based upon a variety of different informational sources. The accuracy and utility of that line in terms of local municipal land use decisions on a parcel or site level is going to be greatly influenced by the degree of refinement of those data sets that go into informing that. And that's why we're so excited about this.
I've looked at a lot of census data, and it's more refined than what you're talking about. I mean, they have the block data and all of that stuff. I mean, it's pretty refined.
Yeah.
It tells you how many people make how much money.
Yeah, in urban areas or urbanized areas, there is a level of census data that's available at the block level. Within urban or urbanized areas, that's very refined. I mean, it literally comes down to a block. But in a lot of rural or semi-rural areas, even at the block level, it's still relatively large. In addition, the amount of data that's available, census data that's available, changes significantly from the block to the block group level. A lot of the data that we want in terms of demographic, population, household distribution, income levels are only available at the block group level. So we're using the block group level because what it would allow us to do is redistribute any census at a value accordingly. Because most of the census values are tied to population density. So you redistribute the densities and then as such we can redistribute any of the census data values. We're also getting in the process of acquiring a separate data set that looks at employment, so it looks at the commercial end. We'll actually look at number of employees, gross revenues, and we can get that updated at a regular interval and also redistribute that. So we'll be able to express things like population, income levels, number of employees, gross sales, and track that over time. So this ties very nicely into our whole economic monitoring program to allow for continuous and regular monitoring of the economic condition of the Highlands region to see whether or not our original initial assumptions hold true in terms of the fiscal impacts of the regional master plan implementation. So there's a lot of benefits to go to the block track group. And in fact, I was proven wrong on a matter that it's not easy for me to accept. But, but that block group, I am confident, is the way to go. And this allows us to get much more refined data. So this is pretty cool stuff. And again, our MP3 program, Municipal Grants Program, we've been working with 10 municipalities, this is Washington Borough, on a variety of different concepts that are going to be addressed within the Regional Master Plan. We're trying to wind these things down. Time is always our enemy, and we would like to try to get these completed and report them back to you. In terms of some regionally relevant local planning initiatives that are helping to inform us, will be useful to, I believe, to the council to provide case study examples of what's being done locally and how it could be incorporated into the regional master plan. Washington Borough has a variety of issues. It has a C1 stream running through the downtown of a very old, established community. They have redevelopment desires to redevelopment portions of the downtown, allow for maximum efficient use of a previously developed area that is sensitive to historic character of the community and protective as much as possible to the existing water course. We're working on them to do a stream corridor management plan along the C1 stream to maximize the degree of protection that's afforded to that stream through their redevelopment opportunities, helping them to inform decisions or standards that are necessary to maintain the historic character of the town and still maximizing opportunities for economic development through redevelopment within the downtown area. So this is, Washington Borough has been great, and they're doing great work. So we're looking forward to reporting on those as they are finalized. And that's all I have.
Well, I hope you can see the staff has been working very hard and has produced quite a lot over the recent past, and we intend to keep that level of work up and to report back to you so you can see how it's progressing. We will continue to raise the issues to the primary committees as the issues come up and to release the data to the public through those committee meetings.
Thanks, Steve and Dante. Any questions?
I sort of request a question and a comment. That was very informative, Steve. I have, as informative as it was, though, I mean, I don't have much in the way of independent analysis to bring to it or judgment to bring, but I appreciate it. One of the things that struck me as I was listening to it, that we might ask Dante and Tom and Steve to contemplate is becoming Cartesians a little bit and measure yourselves and say to us, look, we've got a 7-month or 6-month time schedule here, and we've got a whole series of things, and we've laid out for ourselves when we expect them to be done and when we expect them to be half done and so on. So one of the things that we might ask for the council, but also for the public, is to have you guys tell us, look, we expected to get X done, and we achieved 90% of X over the last month or 2 weeks or whatever the time period is, or 110% of X, and we're marching on our way toward 100% at December 15th or whatever the date is. Now, to the degree that is, I'm sure that's difficult to do, and there are a lot of judgments that go into it, and to the degree that if you thought about that and really had to come back and say, look, you can't do that in a meaningful way, I think I would understand it, but I'd also push you to say to you, look, if you can come up with a schedule and then tell us we're on schedule, we've completed 5% or 10% of the overall stuff, and you know, we're on our way. I think that would be helpful to us rather than sort of a totally qualitative or listing approach, which is what I'd say we we just had.
I think your comments are well taken that we need to monitor percentage completion and work through it that way. To wit, although we weren't able to get you this document enough in advance of the meeting because it was under development in your packet, there's something called the Regional Master Plan Progress Report, and we could even walk through the format with you a little bit now. But one of the things, Michael, that it does do is it lists each of the tasks and it indicates work that was completed during this reporting period, work that's planned for the next reporting period, percentage completion, and then we also have listed the priority of that matter in terms of staying on a critical path, so that if it's a matter that's mostly complete, and yet the fact that it's not complete would set us back in other aspects, it's a critical task. So if you want, we can show you a little bit about how we've laid this out, Mr. Chairman or Michael.
Well, I'd also like it to be a public thing, and I'm perfectly happy to wait until the next meeting, but it does seem to me that it's useful for this audience to see and hear about, and it's not critical this meeting or maybe even in June, but it's going to become critical in September and October and November for us to know, are we really on track, and are we 75% of the way there or not?
We could certainly think about updating something, even if it's more generic on the website, that so folks can follow along as it happens.
And we can.
You want them to take this and interpret this into where do we stand with our December completion date?
Yeah, in effect, I'm being very simplistic. In one sense, you could think about this as a fundraising event, and you're watching the temperature rise on that thermometer that somebody else.
Temperature's definitely rising.
and be able to say that to this group, but then, frankly, less simplistically, to the degree that somebody here wanted to say, why are we at 10% or 25% today? Be able to say, look, we prepared something last May that said we're going to get done over this period of time in this way with the criticality and everything else built in. So that you can judge yourselves, and I suspect you're doing that already implicitly, if not explicitly, but so that we're able to monitor along with you that way.
We can do that, and maybe one other thing we can add is our intention is in the Plan Development Committee meeting that follows and in the ones that will ensue, to have the kinds of discussions that you're talking about in your last comment, namely, if there are, Steve went through a list of all things that we were able to accomplish. To the extent that there are other things out there and that we may need to juggle or change priorities, we're planning to run them through Plan Development and then report it back to the full council, and maybe that would also speak to the issue you raised.
It's very important to note that some things are not going to work. We're either going to run short on time, short on resources, or short on capability. That we're trying to do a lot of innovation. With innovation comes uncertainty. So we will, as we're constantly re-examining and eliminating things that aren't viable.
Now, Steve, when you went through your report there, you indicated there were certain products that were complete. Mm-hmm. Now, we had also said when we announced that we were not going to make the original deadline, that we would start to release some of these products before December so that we could get feedback and all. So are any of these products that are complete now, are they things that we should release? Do we plan to release them?
Yeah, what's ongoing right now, and one of the higher priority tasks is reporting out on the results of a lot of this in a manner that can be distributed. Putting an image is great visually, but without an explanation is...
So can we start to see some of the products?
Yeah, through the committee. The way we've envisioned it is that they'll continue to come out through the committee when the timing is right based on what Steve is describing. And so they'll come out that way. In addition, we will also be taking the things that have come out already by appointments, like say the end of June, and making sure that we have a formal public release so that again the public can see them. So it will be really kind of a two-track process.
I think that some of us, though, even if we're not on a particular committee, would just like to see what these work products look like.
Well, the plan that when we adopted the revised schedule, the milestone in that called for, obviously at the end of June would be when we would start release significant amounts of data. So I think what's important is that the Plan Development Committee, when it meets this afternoon, learns how progress is going on that, and that the committee, the council as a whole, learns that at each meeting. So I think what Dante's saying is, and then Steve too, is if it gets to the point where something we agreed to in that very detailed schedule that we were given when we adopted the revised schedule, if something's falling behind there, that we need to know it and adjust accordingly, and not learn it at the last minute.
I would just like to strike a cautionary note that when we do this, releasing, that the parts are not the sum, and that it should be very clear that this data is as reliable as we're able to produce at a particular time that we let it go, but the public should also know that it doesn't constitute the master plan yet.
Right.
Those pieces are just puzzle pieces that have to be put together.
Yes. And we are very much trying to work the plan. And we're working on data quality, data development, data interpretation. The reporting is very labor intensive. So although the reporting is extraordinarily important both for the benefit of the council as well as the public, we're very much trying to make sure that we're advancing all this data development, data interpretation, and data quality review first, because that's the highest priority. And then we'll start reducing that to writing and reporting on results to the council for the next step.
Other comments? Thanks very much. We'll move on to this topic we've talked about to some extent the last two meetings, is a county grant for sustainable agriculture. We have a resolution in our packet. Dante, you
have a second? Some time ago, the Plan Development Committee referred to the Natural Resource Committee the goal of developing a sustainable agricultural grant program. It would be our fourth grant program that we would roll out. The others have been primarily focused on municipal county governments, primarily focused like the MP3 on case study examples or county grants that are data development issues. Well, this would focus on a key technical issue regarding sustainable agricultural practices to both promote, encourage, and facilitate a viable agricultural community within the Highlands region. The recommendation from committee to the council was to focus on three program areas. Those program areas being integrated pest management program support to Highland farmers, market development and niche market development to increase economic viability of farming in the region, and capacity building among county agricultural development boards, both to provide education technical support to farmers, as well as to provide enhanced land preservation opportunities within the Highlands region. The committee made the recommendation to the council. We met with Budget and Finance to establish a funding level. The recommended funding level is $450,000. Staff recommends that council approval of the grant program so we could solicit proposals. The proposal solicitation process will be a request for scope and budget that allows for a great degree of creativity among interested parties, primarily county agricultural development boards and or their with partners, to address those three program areas. We're not trying to be as prescriptive as we have been in terms of defining the scope and other grant programs, and then the staff would review, provide an evaluation of the merits and limitations, and provide recommendation for award through Natural Resource Committee and ultimately to the council for full consideration prior to award a grant. So staff recommends approval of the grant program in the amount of $450,000.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to add the Budget and Finance Committee report that moved this ahead. It wasn't in your packet, so it's being distributed now. And I'm putting it in the back for folks who would like it.
A question. This $450,000 is money that's been appropriated by the state legislature and that we have, and it's ready to go. Yes?
Yes, yes.
And our decision about what it's spent for is delimited. In other words, it has to be for stuff like this.
It's specifically limited in the statute for grants to municipalities and counties in support of the development and implementation of the regional master plan. And agricultural sustainability.
That works.
Without belaboring the issue, how did we arrive at $450,000 as an appropriate?
I'm not sure. Is Debbie still on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
I think we're both.
Well, she may want to speak to it. Debbie, the question was, how was the $450,000 come to?
I'm sorry, could you speak up? I couldn't hear you.
The question was, during Budget and Finance Committee, the number that was actually initially advanced from Natural Resources was $500,000. Maybe I'll just speak to it. And during the Budget and Finance Committee, we examined the existing budget that this council had approved back in a resolution some time ago. One of the items that was not able to be advanced was a slope analysis for LIDAR, which we were originally going to go through counties and decided it couldn't be done through the counties. And so there was a $450,000 amount that was in that original budget. And so the Budget and Finance Committee, looking to see it that stays within that same range, said $450,000 was available.
So we had the money, we just didn't know what to do with it, and we thought this would be a good idea.
It actually couldn't be spent through the county system. That's why we contracted privately.
And the second question, thank you, the second question has to do with the process for distributing these grants or awarding these grants. They're going to go to counties and municipalities who will make application to this council, and how will they then determine what the criteria are for awarding grants, and how will we determine whether those are appropriate?
The proposal includes the guidelines of the objectives of the individual grant programs, the three program areas within the agricultural grants. There is a series of criteria that will develop that will evaluate each submission's applicants against such factors as the degree of benefit to Highlands municipalities or counties, level of public participation. We're encouraging through this grant program that counties work together in partnership rather than just one county do one thing. We've met with the counties on that issue. There would be other criteria such as the benefits to addressing the requirements under the Act, the benefits to contributing to the overall goals of the regional master plan, the cost associated with the delivery of services proposed. Staff would review each of the grant applications, evaluate them on their merits, provide a recommendation for award based upon those merits within the established limits of funding, which may be 10 grants, 5 grants, 20 grants, depending upon type of applications we get, their relative cost and the benefits each. Provide a recommendation to Natural Resources. If the Natural Resource Committee concurs, we would provide a recommendation for award to council.
And to answer your question about the who, I think you also were asking how that would happen. The proposal is to have the Natural Resource Committee develop the criteria and then be the point of contact when staff has the recommendations.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I'd just like to say at the Natural Resource Committee level, we did discuss in greater detail how this evaluation system would come about. And also we had really good participation from the public and expanded it, for instance, beyond counties to municipalities as well as a result of recommendations from the public and from the TAC. So I think this is an example of a grants program that was probably developed more at the bottom than some of our other grants programs have been. And I think that, you know, considering that one of the goals is to have multiple benefits from each of these grants, such as water quality benefits from using less pesticides through the IPM programs, and, you know, all of these various approaches towards taking a broader approach towards the goals through this program is, you know, makes it very attractive to the council.
Thank you. I mean, I'm certainly in favor of anything that will support agriculture in the Highlands and out of the Highlands as well. I just wanted to get those items cleared up. Thank you.
And the timing in respect of this is the fiscal year starting when and ending when?
Yeah, the,
well, let me first start. This is associated with a particular fiscal year with an appropriation that exists. And that fiscal year ends when?
The original allocation of grant money that was approved by council was fiscal year 05 dollars. This grant program would be included within that fiscal year 05 allocation. The total allocation originally was $2.4 million. Those funds will continue to be dispersed into fiscal year 06 because of just the timing of implementation and reimbursement under the program.
We're in fiscal 06. We're moving into fiscal 07.
Yeah, fiscal 06, and we'll move into next year.
Yeah, I think the short answer to Michael, your question is the fiscal year, as you know, ends June 30th. And the amounts that we have budgeted are for that fiscal year. Our anticipation, although it's not guaranteed, is that monies not spent in that program would carry over into fiscal year 07.
Yeah, that's what I was really getting at. Do we have to? I think what you're saying to me is we don't have to put these out by June 30, 06, although there's some chance that if we don't have them put out by June 30, 06, we may find we don't have them.
That's exactly correct.
The reason I ask that question is I think there ought to be some wording changes in here, but we'll get to that in a minute. The other question I have, I think what you're saying, and I think somebody said it out loud too, is the committee goes out and does this, solicits, gets proposals back, decides that some proposals are good, and brings them to this council for final approval.
Okay.
I have a little bit of wordsmithing here, too, because it does say that ultimately, but on the way I think it says a couple of other things. So when we get around to introducing it, if there are more questions, I will share those observations.
I think one final point, Michael, on your issue would be, I think the intention would be to commit the funds at this time and then have the program continue on, which is slightly stronger than if the view were that they were not committed until a particular application were granted. But
well,
there's still
at the point when the council, when we go through this process, the Natural Resources Committee would solicit proposals, evaluate them, make a recommendation to council to award a grant, and if we didn't have the funds, we wouldn't award a grant.
Right, and the converse is true that right now we'd be encumbering the funds for that particular use at this point. And so that would, I think, be a stronger argument that, you know, we have, in fact, earmarked this for particular usage and that the individual applications haven't been granted yet. So I think it's just a better argument in terms of our planning for carryover. And the way we submitted our budget for FY07 did include these kinds of carryovers. And so far, so good, but we're in the middle of the budget process.
Michael, do you want to make that as a motion with the language you have in mind? Or?
Sure, I'd be delighted. I'd be delighted to move this. The first thing here, the first paragraph, I guess, says develop and implement and talks about distribution. And that was where the confusion came to me a little bit. So conceptually, my suggestion would be to strike and implement and strike and distribution and add a second paragraph that says the Natural Resources Committee is hereby authorized to solicit such grants. It was the distribution phrase that concerned me. The other thing I do with the first paragraph, I think, is we say in an annual amount not to exceed $450,000. I think I take the $450,000 notion and move it up into the whereas clauses with the incremental language that you have enunciated, saying, you know, we're encumbering this now and so on. The second paragraph would then become the third paragraph, and I put a period after it says include systems for accountability, measures of success, and reporting, and I put a period. And then I'd add a fourth paragraph that says, actual grants shall be awarded by the Highlands Council upon the recommendation of the Natural Resources Committee, which is just being even more explicit than we quite got to with this language.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Other comments or questions from council members? Kurt, do you want me to this idea grew in large part from Kurt's work and discussions. Any public comments on this resolution? Yes.
Hi, I just have a question. And then,
wait, could you identify yourself?
Goldman Fry, Highlands Coalition. In point 1A, it says integrated crop management grants. Is that the wording that's desired, or was it integrated pest management grants?
The integrated crop management includes pest management, so it's all inclusive.
And waste management as well.
Pardon me?
And waste management as well.
Any marketing plan for the Highlands agriculture that includes a branding concept focused on the Highlands is ill-advised and nothing more than another effort to divide and conquer the New Jersey farming community. A Highlands brand that says New Jersey produce is better than, that North Jersey produce is better than South Jersey produce is just plain dead wrong. I'd just like to ask that there be no Highlands Jersey Fresh distinction funded with council money. My second comment is I'd just like the council to realize that last year Rutgers basically triaged our IPM program because agriculture in the Highlands, in what I am calling rich people country, is just basically not viable. And this grant is mostly just a diversionary prompt meant to divert the public eye off the farmers' huge equity losses. This money should be put to just compensation.
David Shope, I live in Long Island. First, I have a couple of questions. It's been stated previously by Steve Belzano and others, and his presentation earlier just kind of emphasized it, that the 300,000 parcels are being, individual parcels of land in the Highlands area, are being analyzed as to water bearing capacity, soil types, et cetera, et cetera. They're being examined for a variety of attributes. Is agricultural viability, parcel by parcel, one of the attributes being considered?
What are your other questions?
I don't see any benefits to the farmer. Perhaps somebody can explain to me how this, aside from IPM, which was the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Rutgers took it away, and now it's being given back as some grand gift. Aside from that, how do these grants and dispersing money to the county agricultural boards benefit the individual farmer at all? Those are my two questions. Then I have comments in addition to that. How do you want to handle it?
Well, Steve, do you want to answer the first question?
Sure. The agricultural viability, economic viability of agricultural uses within the Highlands is a major element within sustainable agricultural program. We're trying to look at distribution of the agricultural uses with primary focus on soils to see if there's a way in which we can get a good understanding of what, outside of societal pressures that we're not dealing with, but what resource issues inform where agriculture in the region may be more viable than other areas. But we're just exploring that.
Okay, so at this point, you really can't advise a farmer, who probably knows best already, where his niche market would be, his marketing could take place according to the nature of the soil. Is that correct?
No.
You can't do that?
No.
Okay, so we're basically, you're flinging $450,000 out there and hoping for the best. Really, what you're doing, in my opinion, is attempting to do a minimum amount to try and satisfy the requirements of the bill And to me, this doesn't even rise to the level of lip service. I find this, as an attempt to deal with the requirements of the Highlands Act, insulting.
Yes, good morning. Monique Purcell from the Department of Agriculture. We actually want to support this resolution and appreciate the allocation of funds for these free program areas. We feel it gives us a good opportunity to work with the counties as well as Rutgers Cooperative Research and Extension to come up with some viable economic development opportunities that may be available. And I actually, I'm pretty sure there's some ideas kicking around already. So we look forward to continuing to work with you as well as CPC to establish this process for grants and see them through their fruition. Thank you.
Other
comments? Sir, does this resolution relate to both the planning and the preservation area for agricultural production?
Yes.
It's not zeroed in just on preservation.
Correct.
It's both.
Correct.
Thank you.
Are there other comments from council members?
I'd just like to comment that you may remember my question from the prior meeting in which I addressed the issue or brought up the issue of favoritism for the Highlands farmers as opposed to farmers in other parts of the state. I think that question was adequately answered by Kurt when I raised it. Part of our charge is to promote agriculture in the Highlands, and that's one of the things that this resolution is designed to do. That it's not complete and the process is not specifically laid out yet, I think is part of its charm in a way, because it gives us an opportunity to have this money available and work with the farmers and work with the various entities to make this happen in a way that is going to be acceptable. And I don't think that it's insulting at all. I think that it's a recognition of our charge as the Highlands Council and what we're supposed to do.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just add to that and echo a comment that Tracy made earlier. I think I heard Monique say that part of the design of this program is that it believes that the agricultural community is smart enough and knows their business well enough to come up with the recommendations on how to solve the issues they're facing themselves. It's not prescriptive. It's not top down. And that was both the input that created the program itself. And Kurt, in particular, listening to the agricultural community, very much influenced the design of it. So that is by nature and by design and intentional in the way this program is put together.
Other comments? Okay. We have a motion made by Michael, seconded by Kurt. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Next, we have two somewhat administrative matters. The council, we have a vice chair and a treasurer. We should elect every year at our, I guess, January organizing meeting, and we neglected to do that in January. While there's a draft resolution that puts both of them together in one resolution, I'd like to do them separately, and at this point entertain nominations for a vice chair of the council.
I would like to nominate Jack Fryer for vice
second.
Chair.
Okay. Before you can say no.
Okay. And Mimi, what were you going to say?
Ditto.
Any other nominations?
I'll move nominations before. So.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Every election should be this good.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Thank you.
Okay. Treasurer. We have to need to nominate a treasurer, elect a treasurer to the council for a year. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to nominate Debbie Pasquarelli.
Second.
Any other nominations? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Congratulations to you both.
Congratulations, Debbie.
Thank you very much.
Your official limousines are waiting outside.
way outside. Right. It's a long walk to that car.
Right. Next, our meeting schedule for the year. When we adopted our meeting schedule for 2006, we did it anticipating that we would be proposing and adopting the Regional Master Plan at the end of June, and we therefore scheduled a lot of meetings in this next 2 or 3 month period.
And what we did explicitly at that time was we blocked out a lot of Thursdays, with some of which we anticipated using for the six public hearings the council will hold when we do propose a regional master plan. But the result was we had a large number of meetings scheduled this period, and I think the last few meetings have shown that that there have been a couple where we had a fairly limited agenda, and both members of the council and members of the public all came here for a relatively short meeting, and that it would probably be a more efficient use of everyone's time, including the staff's, to make sure we only meet when we have significant items to discuss and to cover. So the best approximation of that is on the draft resolution in your packet, which has been drafted in discussions with the staff, which would remove from the schedule a number of meetings that had been scheduled from now through the end of the summer, would leave the schedule the same in the fall, but with the anticipation that as the summer ends and fall begins, we may well add meetings to the schedule in the fall, and we also certainly will have to add the dates for the public hearings once we know when those are. So the resolution's there.
I'd like to move, Mr. Chairman, especially in light of your observation and the written observation that we are going to have a more intensive schedule in the October through December time period. And we know that's coming, but it's premature to schedule those.
Is there a second?
I want to thank the chairman.
Was there a second?
Sorry.
Okay, please.
I want to thank you for rearranging the schedule so that we have this nice gift around Thanksgiving and Christmas.
And I would just like to point out that we're going to have lots of committee meetings instead of council meetings.
Right.
So the public is still going to have plenty of opportunity to participate. And the council members will be very busy during this period of time. It doesn't mean there's a dearth of activity.
And I would reiterate just that. I mean, the council meetings are open. For the most part, they're open to the public, except the personnel committee, but they're also open to members, other members of the council who don't happen to be on this committee, so don't hesitate to come to those. Okay, any other discussion on this calendar? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Hey, Mr. Clinton.
Oh.
Have I got a public comment on that?
Sure.
My name is Hank Klopp. I'm a farmer, and I find it a little difficult to get here at 10 o'clock in the morning. And this is our busy time of year, right on through October, November. I was wondering if the council would think about the farmers. It's our land that's we're all talking about, so that we could be here and give our opinion, rather than 10 o'clock, 10 o'clock. I mean, my tractor doesn't run by itself. I mean, somebody's got to be on it. If you understand what I'm saying. But the clutch of the thing is you're making it very, very difficult for the farmers to be here, and we're the ones that are most affected. Thank you very much. And I wish you reconsidered the time. Maybe some evening meetings would be great, because I know there's other farmers, not only myself, that say, well, I got so much to do, I just can't make it. You know what I mean? So, you know, this, I know none of you people are farmers up there, so to you it doesn't matter, but to us it does. And I wish you would reconsider that resolution and go back and put some evening meetings in there. Because, I don't know, there's probably out of this here, I see only two of them for 4 o'clock, or 3.
Okay, thank you.
Debbie,
could you identify yourself, please?
Oh, my name is Deborah Post. This council has voted to delay the release of the regional master plan by 6 months. This council has voted to allow people like Mr. and Mrs. Drysdale to keep their retirement plans on hold for a year longer than the legislature intended. This council has voted to delay the just compensation that the harmed landowners deserve. Yet this council now votes to give themselves a summer vacation. I recommend that this council meet every week, maybe twice a week, until the regional master plan is released. Maybe when it impacts your life, you'll get it done. I'd also like to add to Hank's comments, it hasn't skipped our notice, that moving this council meeting back to 10 a.m. fits more conveniently into the work schedule of paid lobbyists and makes it sure that farmers can't be here.
Thank you. I would say that we've roughly been having 2 out of 3 meetings at 10 o'clock and 1 meeting at 4 o'clock. We had the last several meetings at 4 o'clock, and I recognize that the schedule here has many meetings at 10. The council meetings need to be set up for the convenience in large part of the council members, many of whom serve on municipal and county bodies that meet in the evening. So when we first got started and polled council members about their availability, there was no evening when all council members could be free to be here. When we schedule public hearings on the draft regional master plan, we will be certain to schedule them at a variety of times that are and locations that are some of which we hope will be convenient for everybody, where some will be in the evening and some will be in the daytime. Many will be in the Highlands region and one will be in Trenton and so forth. So we will accommodate that as best we can in that part of the process. But for the council meetings itself, I think it works best for us to have a quorum and often all the members present to meet during the day.
Mr. Chairman, if I could underscore one thing that you said earlier, I want to make sure everyone understood. We would ask council members to continue to hold all Thursdays.
Yes.
The one thing about allowing us not to have council meetings every Thursday or even every other Thursdays will allow us to maximize our committee meetings. And Tracy Carluccio made this point as well. For example, next week we wanted to check with you. We probably will have 4 committees meeting next week on Thursdays, so we'll be checking availability, but by not having too many full council meetings will allow us to be the absolute most efficient in producing the plan, and that will be by moving our committees now to get the information passed up to the full group.
I would just like to add, Mr. Klump, at last notice, I'm still farming full time, but you commented.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but I like the nighttime meetings too, and was happy we struck the one-third compromise this year. But committee meetings, I'd sure love to see some evening committee meetings. I've been pretty silent, but these daytime committee meetings are a killer, especially with 2 days' notice.
Well, maybe we can try to go two-thirds, one-third on that as well, Mr. Chairman.
One-third compromise would be appreciated.
All those in favor of the resolution?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Grants, municipalities, and counties?
There are none.
That's why I couldn't find it. Okay. Are there any other matters from council before we turn to public comments? Okay. Anyone from the public who would like to speak? Those who, I don't know if there's anyone who hasn't been here before, but if you would like to speak for up to 3 minutes, we would be delighted to hear what you have to say, and if you have any written comments, we'd be happy to accept them and read them.
Boy, Steve, we got a fancy chair here to sit down here today. My gosh. That was some presentation you made. I've got my...
Okay.
All right. So we keep everybody honest, as the farmer says. My name is Hank Klump. I'm a farmer in Hunterdon. My 150 acres have been put into Highlands Preservation. Here I am again. Nothing new to say, but have no choice but to continue saying it because nothing has changed. Or if it has, you haven't informed me. I get better answers to my questions on the bridge outside or in the parking lot than I do standing here. I know you will tell me you are just following the rules, which allows no dialogue. Who made these rules? Many of us are living in limbo. Adding 6 month delay does not give me any hope because I have been told straight out that you have no scientific study that I've been asking for to show why my farm is even in the preservation area. The Highlands map mysteriously changed. The change was political one.
not a scientific one. In the original draft, Tewksbury wasn't even part of the Highlands. I have a map showing this. What happened? My farm was put into the Highlands Preservation Area overnight, behind closed doors. Something is very, very wrong. Is another 6 months going to fix this for me? The only people who are defending the Highlands Act are the people who have no financial loss at stake. I'm tired of being called part of a very vocal minority of critics and reading that my land investment will never lose its value and it is not in jeopardy. These uninformed people should be asked to finance the Highlands Act like I am being forced to do. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. And there's one other comment that I'd like to ask Steve, is all the maps, I'm a pencil and, guy. I'm not into computers, and I think it's amazing what you can do up there. But to me, you have to physically, or somebody has to physically go out and look and to make sure what shows up is what it is. You know what I mean? I can tell you, I don't have a C1 stream on my farm. But I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, the maps are great. I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't know how, it's amazing to me. So, but if, physical checking on these, I know you're under restraints and all that stuff, but somebody has to go out there and physically check these things. I mean, it's simple. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm done. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Susan Buck from Oxford. Just want to make note, it seems unless something's happened since the last time I looked on the internet, the DEP has missed their deadline to issue final regulations for the preservation area. This is the third big deadline in my mind that's been missed. And I'm unclear as to why the state of New Jersey people are allowed to ignore the law and we are not. It seems to be just an undisguised effort to delay the compensation of landowners. The state of New Jersey is broke, cannot pay the landowners, and is losing the heart to even try and pay the landowners. And once again, I would ask for support to get legislation fixed as things already introduced and about to be introduced that's going to take some of these problems away. And you could take the entire Highlands Act away, actually, but it needs to be done. There's no end in sight. I'm not sure what's going on with the DEP. Maybe you guys do know, but I was hoping that would have come up for conversation today because that's big to us. The good news is there are no DEP regulations so far as I'm concerned because they missed the deadline and there are no permanent regulations. The temporary ones have expired and we're free to do as we please.
The status as reported thus from the department is that they are readopting rules and they have consulted with the Office of Administrative Law in terms about the process for doing that. And
they're readopting the interim rules?
Yes. And by being in the process of doing a readoption, there's an extension that's provided by the Administrative Procedures Act. And so they're operating pursuant to the laws that are reported to them from the Office of Administrative Law. So that's the status that we've got. So we understand that they will be adopted once they finish responses to the numerous comments that they've got.
It would be good to get an update on that by the next meeting if they haven't taken any public action by then.
I don't believe they'll be taking public action between now and the next meeting. I understand it's probably longer than that, but we can get an update as soon as they are about to move.
Other comments?
My name is Deborah Post, and those of you who stuck around after the last council meeting,
might have overheard me taking Mr. Pringle to task for his offensive gross misrepresentations of the harmed Highland landowner. It is weeks later, and I am still boiling. Mr. Pringle is a paid lobbyist. He has given cash to come here to defame the harmed farmers with name-calling, such as polluter and greedy developer. Paid lobbyists with their lies, spins, and defamations are the underbelly of New Jersey, and we all know it. When I told Mr. Pringle that I do not pollute my farm, his response was, "Don't you have a septic system?" Are we to believe that Mr. Pringle has never flushed a toilet? How many members of this council have a septic system? How many members of this council walked or rode their bicycle here today? Did Mr. Pringle not drive a car to the council meeting? If we are all polluters, why must the Highland landowners only pay the cost? Mr. Pringle's comments remind me of a defense attorney's closing argument in a rape case. He wants you to believe that the victim here, the Highlands open space owner, has done something to provoke the taking of their property value and is thus deserving of the rape of their net worth. Mr. Weingart, you have no trouble interrupting me when I speak the truth about Mr. Spinelli's gifting of my net worth. However, Mr. Weingart, you sit here quietly through Mr. Pringle and other paid lobbyists' defamations of character. Mr. Pringle, Ms. Fry, and other paid lobbyists tell you that the landowners must get used to the theft of $6 billion of their equity, a spin we have recently seen repeated in the newspapers. Would Mr. Pringle also tell the Enron employees and other shareholders that they too have experienced just a bad investment and must just get used to the losses they have suffered? When managements put their hand into the cookie bowl and move assets from one ownership title to another ownership title, we call it without payment, it is called white-collar crime. A large portion of American law is devoted to the protection of investment, a prerequisite for a flourishing capitalistic democratic society. We need only witness the corrupt state of the old Soviet economies to understand that without judicial protection of honest investment, the general population does not enjoy a flourishing, growing economy. No, the harmed landowners will not get used to the loss of their equity. If the landowners are not compensated for their losses at fair market value without undue restrictions on their life, the judicial process will render the Highlands Act null and void. I would also like to complain about propaganda being put back on the table as if it was issued by the council, unless indeed it is being issued by the council.
I would agree with you on that last point. We will be careful not to do that. Other comments this time? Yes.
Good morning. My name is Andy Drysdale. I live at 32 East Fox Chase Road in the preservation area of Chester Township, Morris County, New Jersey. This is all about extremes. As I write this, I'll just learn more about it now, but I have not seen the final DEP regulations that I believe were to be completed on May 9th, nor do I know if they have yet been made public. I only hope and pray that the horrible extremes that existed in the interim rules have been removed. Well, apparently they haven't. There are numerous causes for extremes. Some of those are greed, passion, ignorance, and lack of foresight. In the case of greed, the others are often taken advantage of and used to promote political and financial gain. The result of extremes can be devastating, as we all know. Many wars have been fought because of extremes. Imbalances of nature have been caused by extremes. An example of environmental extremes are the in nature have An example of environmental extreme is the overprotection of the deer population has been a major factor in the spread of Lyme disease. Lyme disease is often a very debilitating and devastating disease. I know that because it has had an effect on our a devastating effect on our family. Deer ticks carry Lyme disease and other diseases. Mosquitoes also carry many terrible diseases. The overprotection of impervious wetlands and protects the prime breeding place for these insects, as well as a place for brush fires to occur. A good daily reminder of what extremes can do is the price of gasoline. So we all need to be very vigilant and guard against extremes. Thank you.
My name is David Chope. I live in Long Valley. The 2002 U.S. Agricultural Census for New Jersey, which is the latest one available. I'll just go down through a few. The average size of a farm in Morris County is 42 acres. The net cash before taxes is $25,561. Hunterdon, the average size is 72 acres, and they earned a minus $6,838. Warren, the average size is 94. On 94 acres, the farmer earned before taxes $4,426, and so it goes. And when you do the division of dollars per acre, you get a pathetic return on equity. You get an absolutely pathetic return on equity. And we are expected to continue to suffer this pathetic return so that our towns can get 64 cents of every tax dollar that we pay. We only consume 36 cents. We are a tax positive to the town. In addition to that, our neighbors who live in houses with small lots get the free use of our land for both water recharge for their wells and nitrate dilution. They get this at no charge. Our land is being used by others for both these uses. Additionally, our neighbors get the benefit of nice views, which increase the values of their property, and in exchange we get a devaluation of our property thanks to the Highlands Bill and other restrictive laws. I consider this a parasitic arrangement. I feel the landowners and that do these services are being parasitized by our neighbors and towns. We are also further parasitized by providing what the municipalities call rural character. People move into the rural character and don't even say thank you. What they do is they object to everything that we want to do with our property because it may detract from the, quote, rural character to which they've contributed nothing. And the other way in which we are parasitized is the whole Highlands Bill elects to restrict our land under the guise of water for the downstream users. We get nothing in exchange except ever-increasing regulation. The water is sold and resold. We derive no benefit. The benefit goes east and south. Additionally, the state government, through the various departments, particularly DEP and community services, issues grants. They take our tax dollars, my tax dollars, and issue them to, quote, environmental nonprofits. Some get paid $45,000. Some who I think sit up there get paid even more. Nonprofits. They are using my tax dollars to further restrict the use of my land. this is another, and perhaps the most insidious, form of parasitism there is. I consider the agencies who dispense these grants, not just state agencies, but the New Jersey Water Supply Authority is another one. They dispense grants to their buddies to further this
Show some respect.
I beg your pardon?
I said show some respect. We're sitting here listening to you.
Yeah, but you're interfering with me. And you're a paid lobbyist, I believe.
Can you conclude your comments, Mr. Schiff?
Yeah. Hopefully without interruption. They put money into the coffers of these nonprofits so that they can send their paid lobbyists up here and I call this whole arrangement, the government arrangement, the Politburo of Central Planning. And it's just, and then what I heard this morning about this pathetic attempt at agricultural viability, it just is, to me, this is nothing more than an exquisite display of indifference and arrogance.
Any other public comments? Yes, sir.
Douglas Williams, Flanders. I have more of a question first. I'd like to know, since the Highlands has been pushed back 6 months, does that also push back everything else, as in the pre-Highlands property values and so forth? That's not clear in any of this either. But on the other, and going on from that, with these paid lobbyists coming in, and like Mr. Pringle telling us that we don't care for our land, we don't know how to care for our land, there's just no right in that. He has no idea that we've had this land. The only reason it's of any value at this point in time is because we have kept it pristine. We have taken care of the land. And he's making it look like we don't take care of anything. That's about all I have to say. Thank you.
There is no change in the other dates of the act, for your question. Are there other comments?
Good morning. Bill O'Hearn with the Highlands Coalition, and this is my last official appearance as another of your favorite frequent flyers before you. I'm going back to another job to buy land for a land trust in northern New Jersey and lower New York State. So I'll miss Hank and his sign. Maybe I can get a souvenir sign to take with me where I go. But I wanted to express to this group that as a representative of the Highlands Coalition, it's been a pleasure working with all of you, attending both the committee meetings and these public meetings. We haven't always agreed, but I think you have done what we asked you to do more than a year ago, which is to be open, to make yourselves available. And we've been very happy with the fact that you have listened while, again, we've had some disagreements. They've been honest and open disagreements. So my successor, Julia Summers, starts next week. You'll find her, I think, with her experience as a Great Swamp Watershed person to keep our focus on water, and we hope you will continue to do that. And as an open space person now, I hope you will do one of the things that the Highlands Act mandates is to set some priorities for acquisition and make those available to the public, and I hope you will fulfill that mission, in addition to taking care of our water. So thank you for the hard work that you've done, for listening to me and others for this year plus, and I'll be watching. So keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
I'm Robert Fry, Pohacon Township. On the 25th of April, the Warren County Board of Agriculture sent a letter to Mr. Weingart to the Highlands Council. If I may read this. Mr. Weingart, at almost every regular meeting of the Highlands Council, there have been members of the North Jersey farming community expressing their concerns with the Highlands Council Water Protection and Planning Act and its effect on agriculture. Specifically, the loss of equity inherent in the Act is a major concern reiterated many times. Modern agriculture is capital intensive and needs both funding and markets to be successful. Fruit and vegetable operations, both commercial and organic, are also very labor intensive. Ecotourism and niche marketing are quaint ideas, but are unrealistic for the majority of farm operations in the Highlands. The Highlands area can and does grow corn and soybeans well. In fact, national high record corn yields have been reported in recent years. The New Jersey legislature recently banned the use of MTBE, a suspected carcinogen, in gasoline. The only known oxygen enhancer and octane booster is ethanol. Nearby North Jersey petroleum refineries are reputedly currently importing ethanol from Brazil. Several vacant industrial and brownfield sites exist in the Highlands area, and turnkey state-of-the-art ethanol plants are being built elsewhere. Ethanol production requires large amounts of corn, and only two markets currently exist in Warren County for corn. Locally grown soybeans can be turned into biodiesel fuel, with the residue from both processes being excellent animal feed. The proposed ethanol biodiesel plant being considered in Salem County would only serve South Jersey and the Delmarva Peninsula, not our area. Therefore, the Warren County Board of Agriculture requests grant money for support of sustainable agriculture and economic development with assistance for feasibility studies, site selection, zoning waivers, and help in establishing ethanol biodiesel manufacturing facilities from the New Jersey Highlands Council. And a personal comment, Warren County Board of Agriculture has not received, as of 4 p.m. yesterday, even a response to this. The board meets next week.
Thank you. I did receive a letter and discussed it with the staff, and we will be responding. It may be something that can fit under the grants program. Consider the grants program we approved earlier. There are other comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say one comment. My 11-year-old daughter is studying the Bill of Rights and the Constitution right now. She's going to Philadelphia tomorrow to walk, you know, the streets of that city where those documents were written. And I guess what I want to say is, you know, the right of free speech is not unbounded. I think we all know the story about you don't have the right to yell fire in a crowded theater. And I think that a few basic tenets of decorum might be good in our public comment that we allow. We have been very, very open to hearing what could be a range of views that many people might characterize as extreme. And I think if we allow our public comment session to devolve into personal attacks by name on dissenting views, either way, whether it's the environmental community going against the property rights advocates or vice versa, it's inappropriate. It doesn't add nor inform more to our work. If folks think that we're not listening to them, that's unfortunate. I think we do. We may not agree with them. It may not change the course. It may not rewrite the legislation. But people here hear them as they're speaking. And I think some of the comments that were offered today were inappropriate and show intolerance and basic disrespect for democracy. And I would ask those people who have wrapped themselves in the flag and the Constitution and their appearances before us to go back and think about that.
Other comments? Comments from members of the council?
Well, the only procedural thing, Mr. Chairman, if I could add, would be, I think, the fact that we've had a number of comments today that are personal directed rather than issue directed. I think it should not be taken as an agreement by this council that the council would necessarily allow them in the future. I think the council might want to think about a policy, if only that, you know, ad hominem attacks are not allowed. Clearly, folks can speak on substance in any way that they deem appropriate. But I just want to make sure that, you know, if in the future you as the chairman or the council sets down some guidelines for how to do this, it's not we're not faced with an argument that says, well, you allowed it sometime in the past. And I think the issue is raised, so I want to make sure that it can be appropriately considered by the council and actually taken if necessary.
I think civility and is certainly something that would help the deliberations, and I think it has largely been present both from the public and from the council. And I think it makes sense, you know, certainly if someone from the public makes a comment and other people in the public disagree with that comment at that meeting or a subsequent meeting, it's appropriate to refer to that and to if the people feel we were misinformed or a comment was not properly based, to say that. I do agree personal attacks are not appropriate in this kind of setting, and I would encourage everyone to refrain from them if possible.
Mr. Chairman, I would take issue with the idea of prohibiting ad hominem attacks. I hate them. I think they're loathsome. I think they are the last resort of somebody who can't come to terms with the language that would address an issue, and I deplore their use here. I would not want to prohibit them. I think the people who make those kinds of remarks are making as good a statement about themselves as can be made. And I think that the majority of people who listen to those remarks understand what is being said and from whence it comes. So I would not want to limit that kind of discussion here, much as I don't like it. And I think that it doesn't help the process at all to either do that or to listen to those kinds of comments. But I would be very reluctant to limit that kind of speech, even here.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to weigh in on that. I want to support what Mr. Schreier just said. While we might find them distasteful, back to Tim's comments about the Bill of Rights, I think they're protected under the Bill of Rights. And I also don't know, as an elected official, that we can limit them to the extent some might like. But I'd like to add also to those, whether it's comments I heard at the last meeting, which I too found distressful, as well as other comments that I hear, I wish the speakers would consider how productive their comments are. I know there's times, as much as I try and be open-minded, when I hear attacks, when I hear insensitive remarks from whoever, it can't help but affect how I feel about some of the issues. So I would caution everybody to think about what the impact of their comments are before they speak. I think everyone on the council is trying to do their best and trying to be objective and trying to address the issues. But if the rhetoric continues to deteriorate, it's not going to be productive for anyone. Thank you.
I just I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I wonder what other councils do, because I think based on Mr. Dillingham's comments and what Dante brought up, that that it's very uncomfortable to sit here and listen to an attack on an individual only because of where they work or because the person did not agree with them. And I think that it's not only is it a time waster, but I think, as Mr. Dillingham said or somebody said, it doesn't add to the value of what we're hearing. And that's what I see these public comment sessions as, value. They're when qualitative comments should be made by the public to help the council, you know, move ahead in our mission. And I'd like to know if maybe our attorney or somebody, maybe Dante, could take a look at what other councils do. Is there really a procedure that doesn't infringe on a person's First Amendment rights that could... where we could limit, or the chair could limit, personal comments, destructive personal comments being made by members of the public. I think it's worth taking, you know, a look at.
I don't think it may be worth taking a small look at, but I think, I think many of us have been, I think these meetings are great. I think public comments are great, and while a few of them go over a line I would draw, and that many of us would draw, most of them, I think, as Jack said, that it just sort of discredits the person making the comment, and we do get a lot of valuable comments, and I don't want to get in the position of trying to measure them, their quality. I think part of the problem, that many of the people who comment regularly at the meetings are incredibly frustrated because they want to be talking to the legislature and saying the legislature shouldn't have passed this act, and they're talking to us because we're here. And there's just sort of an inherent disconnect in that. And there's, I don't think that, you know, it's not in our power to say anything that they want to hear, and that and it is what it is, as our president said. So I don't know exactly what to do about that, but I don't think we should get in. We want people to tell us what's on their mind about, particularly about things that are within our power to do in administering the act as it exists under law at the moment, and not get in the business of measuring those comments anyway or censoring them. That said, I think that we're all sort of saying various versions of the same thing.
I would like to, though, make one suggestion. At times there are people in the audience who speak whose views are so aligned with other members of the audience that there's a compulsion to applaud the performance of the speaker, and I would ask that that be restrained. I think this is not a theater. This is a public meeting, and I find it very distressing that some people are applauded for their speech, and other people are derided for it. I would ask that you just make your comments if you care to, and we will accept them in the spirit in which they are given, and I would ask that you do not, or at least try to, control yourselves when it comes to applauding certain comments by other people. That would be my only suggestion.
Just to be clear, Mr. Chairman, we're not going to spend any staff time dealing with this any further, correct? Because I'm opposed to investing any staff time into this issue. There's no benefit. Enough has been said here, I think, to cover the issue.
I would agree with that.
I'd like to see how the next public comment session goes.
Right. Well, and I will say, at one of our more recent public events, I did have to usher some folks out of the room because, frankly, not only had a very animated discourse, but to the extent it was, you know, it was worse than that, and it was quite a disruption. So just so that if members weren't here to see that, you know, I am mindful that the same kinds of issues have overflowed in ways that I think are just not acceptable and for public safety as well. So I don't have an opinion on whether we should follow it or not. Follow up on it. I leave that to members of the council to give us direction. But it is an issue that I thought about because of that as well. Because we need a safe place. We need a place where you all can think about the issues, and that's really what we need to do.
Chairman, just one thing. We have a meeting now for, you know, close to a year and a half, and I think for the most part, I think, as you said, the frustration is what gets to everybody. I can feel for the people in the audience who are frustrated, and I can equally say I'm as frustrated as you are at times with the issues that we're grappling with. But I think last meeting was probably the worst that I've seen, and I would agree the individual that made those disparaging comments were probably uncalled for and maybe went overboard, but I think there's enough of people that are here both on this side of the table and on that side of the table that can get word back to the people that maybe he answers to that, you know, if he's going to come and attend these meetings, he should act in a professional manner and, you know, think before he makes some of the remarks that he's made. So, as Kurt said, you know, I think we have enough to do, and, you know, we don't want to be wasting any of our staff resources and dollars on taking this issue any further, and let's just see if we all can keep our own personal thoughts in check without, you know, offending anybody, and see how it goes from this point moving forward.
Just one comment, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we lead by example. My short time here has demonstrated that, you know, you're very respectful to the public here, and I don't know how we would legislate respect for others. So we can talk about this all day long, but from a practical point of view, how would we do that? I think we do that by asking and displaying respect for those and asking them to respect us.
Motion to adjourn. You can respond to him afterwards if you'd like. Our next scheduled meeting is June 1st at 10 o'clock. Motion to adjourn. Seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you all.
In the back, turn it off. I'm going to go back to the clock.